Just 24 hours to go until our home World Cup gets underway, and I'm here for the next hour, and I'm very lucky to be joined by the England and Sussex bowler, Timal Mills. Love to get stuck in with you, Timal, and look forward to 24 hours to go, mate. How excited are you?
Morning, Nick. Yeah, great to be here. It's going to be a great month or so of cricket. It's been built up for a long time, hasn't it? Obviously, a lot of expectation on England's behalf, but yeah, it's going to be great. There's going to be some great cricket played over the next 6 weeks.
Just looking at the bowling attack, a lot's been spoken about, you know, a little bit of precautionary work there from Mark Wood, who went off with a slight limp in the last game, but you tell me that I think everything's okay.
Yeah, I was at the Oval before the game against Afghanistan the other day, and I was on the pitch and just said, oh, how you going, mate? And he was like, yeah, it was fine. It was one of those things, you know, as you know, you'd normally go through it and you'd play through it, but he said, obviously, with one eye, with the World Cup obviously starting, he felt something in his ankle that was a bit different to normal. It wasn't the normal pain he said he normally gets in his troublesome left ankle. So he kind of just walked off. They had a scan. It came back all clear, just a little bit of bruising or a bit of swelling in there. And yeah, he said he's all good for the tournament.
You're a man who's had a few injuries, as we all have.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
so.
It is something that plays on your mind, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, because it's his ankle again, if it's something different, you probably would treat it a little bit different. But he's had so many problems with his left ankle. If you ever get the chance to watch him bowl on the TV throughout this tournament, if you watch the way his left ankle really slams down and it's not straight. Normally a bowler's front foot, it will land straight down the middle of the wicket, but Woody's lands slightly on an angle, which really puts a lot of pressure on it. So they've tried to straighten him up, but it's one of those things that when you've been bowling for 10, 15, sure, 20 years, it's a tough thing to straighten up. So, yeah, it's obviously something that's been giving him a lot of problems, but for England's sake, I hope it's good for the next month or so.
I suppose you compare him to a good friend of yours, Joffrey, who plays down at Sussex with you, and I mean, you look at the comparison in their actions. Mm. I mean, the ease and grace in which he bowls. How good is this guy?
Oh, he's world-class, and I feel I've done as many interviews about Joff as he's done over the last month or so. But yeah, obviously I know him well. I've played with him at Sussex the last few years. Played with him at the Big Bash as well with the Hobart Hurricanes. And yeah, you know, he's a good mate of mine, and he's loving it. You know, I trained with him yesterday. I bowled at him in the nets down at Sussex, and yeah, he's on really good form. He's just taking it all in his stride. It's I think a lot's been made of it. Obviously, sure, with the circumstances around his qualification, everything getting sped through to rush him through, and then the expectation. And I think hopefully now we've seen enough where we can just sit back and enjoy Joff and just watch him do what he's been doing all around the world for the last few years.
I suppose they complement each other quite well, don't they? I mean, Wood's obviously a little bit skiddier, you know, a bit shorter, doesn't really hit the deck in sort of the same way that and kiss the deck like Joffrey does. I suppose, you know, is Wood someone you'd risk tomorrow?
I think so. I think it'll be interesting to see what combination they go with. If I think Chris Wokes probably has earned the new ball to keep the new ball with Joff, and then I think they might be quite quick to say if Joff hasn't got a wicket in his first few, you can then bring in Wood straight away, because then, you know, then you've still got overs in the tank throughout that middle and back end. But I think Wokes is still kind of the leader of the attack, yeah, in my opinion. I think he's a really skillful bowler and he's been very consistent. I know he's had knee issues, so that'll be another thing to keep an eye on. But I think England's depth, it looks like potentially you're then going to have Plunkett and Tom Curran kind of in the wings, and obviously Ben Stokes is your all-rounder. So I think they'll rotate a little bit throughout the tournament, especially against some of the nations which they might, you know, be deemed less challenging.
Yeah, well, I think we know the nature of these World Cups. You know, there's likely to be injuries. So, I mean, the backup guys are just as important. I mean, you've been in an England squad, you know, like this. And how important is it that you stay fresh, that you stay ready to get your opportunity?
Yeah, it's a long tournament. And the games come relatively, you know, thick and fast. You're probably playing two a week, maybe Saturday, Wednesday, kind of that type of routine. And if you do pick up a niggle, it might be a case you might struggle to make the next game, but you then kind of have a week to the other one. So I'm sure that, you know, everybody in that squad will play at some point. I think England will have an eye on that. They'll have another eye on the Ashes as well, maybe just half an eye. Obviously, the World Cup comes first,
sure,
but you got to remember what's still to come. It's a huge summer for English cricket, so it'll definitely take some managing. And with guys like Wokes and Wood that do have injury history and are coming into the tournament with a few niggles, it will definitely be something to the England want to manage.
So it's clearly a massive summer for English cricket. I guess you've played under Owen Morgan. A lot has been made of, you know, the team and how they've sort of really moved this one day team into being such a competitive side. What was it like playing under him, and what's been the difference?
Yeah, I really like Morgs. I think he's a great captain. You'd know him as well. You played together in Middlesex for years, so you know Morgs. He's a calm character. But I think you earn the right to be kind of that calm. Obviously, it's easy to be calm when you've got a good team, obviously. But sure. But I think Morgs gives, as a fast bowler, he gives you, he just trusts you and he backs you. So I know I was playing in the Pakistan Super League the year before last. Morgs flew in for kind of a 5-game stint and he captained that little stint. And I remember one game, we were at Sharjah, we were, you know, playing Islamabad, I think, or someone, and Morgs just quickly came up to, obviously I was playing, and he came up to me and said, "Oh, T, you all good? Do you know what you're doing?" I said, "Yep, all good." And then me and Morgs didn't speak again for the
brilliant
until I was out in the middle, and he said, "Okay, can you, you know, you're bowling." So I think for me that was nice because I knew Morgs trusted me completely. He wasn't having to worry if I knew who we're playing against or the pitch dimensions, or, you know, he trusted my prep, which was nice. And then that's then good for him that he's as a captain of a team, you know, you've got so many things you've got to worry about, and, you know, field placements, picking the team, your own bat, you've got to get ready to sure, bat your own sure. innings. So there'll be a lot of trust within that yeah. that squad, I think, because
yeah.
they play together so much. Mm. Obviously, Jofra's just come into it, so I'm sure Morgs and Joff would have spent a little bit of time together just to get used to each other and you know, find out what makes each other tick. Morgs will be figuring out what fields Joff likes. Joff will be seeing what Morgs expects of him. But for the rest of the guys, they've played so much cricket together over the last few years, it's a seamless relationship.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that. The guys look like they know when they're coming on, they know what their fields are. And I think, you know, we've both been in teams where, you know, you have that trust, even as a fielder, you sort of, you can almost call the captain's decisions, you know. And I think when you get to that place, it's quite exciting, isn't it? And I think one of the things that's really hit me is the way that he's handled the spinners, you know. I mean, Adil Rashid has been a real find. And I think he's, not that he's gone under the radar, but, you know, he's been an exceptional one-day bowler for England. And I suppose the handling of him has been, you know, one of the key factors in England's sort of rise.
Yeah, I think Rash is brilliant. And as you say, he probably doesn't get the amount of credit he maybe deserves. I think if you take Adil out of that England team, I reckon it's quite a different side. He's really important. He takes wickets consistently, doesn't he? Which we speak about in one-day cricket is so vital in 50-over cricket. And that middle period, the game can kind of go into a bit of a lull, can't it, where batters are just knocking it around a little bit, bowlers aren't taking wickets. But when you have somebody like Rash that can get a wicket at any point of the innings, and he's brave, isn't he? He's not afraid to toss the ball up, he'll bowl googlies.
And he bowls in the last five overs.
100%.
I mean, there's not many spinners who do that.
Exactly, because he's not afraid of getting hit for six, and that's key. You've got to understand, in the modern cricket, you're going to get hit for six. It's a horrible feeling. I'm a bowler, you're a batsman, so we're at complete opposite sides of the coin, but it's happening, okay? So you'd be, the key is, if you get hit for six, what's your next ball going to be? Right. Are you going to go back into your shell and think, "Oh my God, I don't want to get hit for six," or are you going to go, "No, I'm going to get this bloke out here"? So I think that's where Rash comes into it, because it doesn't matter if he gets hit for six, that next ball he's just as likely to get a wicket again. So, and again, going back to Morgs, there's trust there, isn't it? You'll often see in this tournament, if Morgs needs a wicket or if they're in a bit of a sticky situation, don't be surprised if Adil Rashid has the ball.
That's great. I think the only thing we're worried about is this slight shoulder injury. I mean, you know, look, there's going to be injuries. We've just spoken about that. But do you know how bad that is?
I haven't heard too much. I think it's all right. Okay. I won't profess to knowing an awful amount. But yeah, again, as I said, if you take him out of that team, it is a different proposition. And then a lot of pressure's on Liam Dawson, who didn't play at all during the Pakistan series, then got drafted in. He had a really good... I watched quite a bit of the Royal London 50-over competition. He was really impressive and really consistent for Hampshire. But he's a finger spinner. He's not a wrist spinner like Adil Rashid. So it's a different threat, different level of... different threat level that he brings to the team. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Love Sports. We've got Colin Munro coming on the show very shortly, the New Zealand opening batsman. Tamil knows him well from his days at Auckland. But just a little bit about the game yesterday. Obviously, New Zealand played their last warm-up match against the West Indies. I'm going to dine out a little bit because West Indies did beat New Zealand, and I did tip them as one of the outside teams. But both teams are sort of under the radar a little bit, but we know how competitive New Zealand can be in World Cups.
Yeah, bit of a run fest down in Bristol yesterday. West Indies scoring 420, New Zealand only able to get 330 in reply. But they're two dangerous sides. West Indies, especially with the bat, we all know what Chris Gayle can do. Andre Russell was in scintillating form in the World Cup, in the IPL, sorry, wasn't he? It was
unbelievable.
It was the consistency and the size of the sixes he was hitting. So really good for the West Indies to have him in their side. And they've got some guys like Shai Hope, who's been scoring hundreds. He really flies under the radar. I think he's a really talented player. But New Zealand, that top four, Munro, Guptill, Ross Taylor, Kane Williamson, that's a pretty formidable top four. So I think this World Cup's going to throw up a few surprises here and there.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look too much into these warm-up games. I mean, obviously, England lost to Australia, which, you know, a lot of people are talking about. But, you know, I don't really think it's a big... I think people just want time in the middle. And I guess New Zealand, you know, they do go under the radar. But when it comes to it, when it comes to the pressure situations, a guy like Kane Williamson, who's such an unbelievable batsman, you know, definitely one of the top three, four players in the world. I mean, they're going to be right up there.
Yeah, I think Kane, he's a great captain as well. You hear great things about him as a leader and as a man. And yeah, he's been brilliant in the IPL as well. So he comes in good form.
Well, look, I'm delighted to say that we've got Colin Munro on the line. Colin?
Good day, lads. How you going?
Yeah, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Outstanding game yesterday. I mean, I know you didn't play and it was obviously a good run out for the boys, but how was it from the sides?
Yeah, obviously it was a great game, good wicket, and then you know, obviously they put us under pressure, but you know, we've got a lot of learnings and positives to take from that game. So out of the two warm-up games, we're pretty happy where we're sitting at the moment, and hopefully just brought a bit of momentum leading into that first game come Saturday.
Now it's good, Glenis. Thanks for joining us, mate. Good to speak to you again. As you say, you guys beat India in your first warm-up game. Second game, played the West Indies over in Bristol. Do the guys feel like between those two games you guys have got enough for the English conditions, as well as obviously the training sessions you've had as well?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, a lot of guys have played cricket over here, whether it's been a bit of county stuff or whether it's even in the blast. So guys know the conditions quite well. And yeah, it's just trying to assess as early as you can. Sometimes where you go in England, the wickets are slightly different and look a bit different, but sometimes play similar. So it's just about assessing those conditions in the first 5 to 10 overs, whether we're batting or bowling, and then just communicating it down the line. And yeah, that's probably the biggest part in tournament play as well, who adapts to the conditions the best.
Sweet. And then looking forward to your first few games in the World Cup, you start off with Sri Lanka, Bangladesh and Afghanistan, your first three matches, which a lot of people could perceive as a nice way to start the competition. How have you guys looked? I know you'll have your scouting meetings and you'll try and look loosely at how you're going to go through the tournament. Do you think it's an advantage starting off? I know you're not going to underestimate them and call them easy oppositions, but would you say that's a beneficial way to start the competition?
Yeah, well, I think so. Nice way to sort of ease into the competition, but like you said, there's no easy beats. Everyone can beat everyone on their day. So it's just about trying to... I don't think we have to go out there and try and play the perfect cricket match. We just got to go out there, even if you win ugly, it doesn't matter, as long as you get a W in these tight games. So yeah, if we can get off to a good start and then, you know, get those hopefully 3 from 3 without looking too far ahead, but and then you've got India there, and if you know, if we're 4 for 4, then you're sitting quite pretty, and then gives you a little bit of leeway towards the back end of the competition when you've probably got the more higher ranked teams to play.
Colin, do you feel under much pressure? I mean, if you look at a lot of the teams in terms of how they're set up, you know, you've got the likes of Warner and Finch, and you know, obviously Bairstow and Roy have really set the world alight, as you have with Martin Guptill. Do you sort of feel like it's a really important time for you to really get the team off to a good start? I mean, you know, there's some big scores out there.
Yeah, I think, well, I haven't done it in the one-day format before, so it's, you know, I've had a pretty lean sort of summer in the one-day format, but if I can go out there and just be clear and free in my mindset and just watch the ball and try and play it like, you know, the first 6 of a T20, and without being too aggressive, you know, you can see the way Jason Roy and them go about it, and you sort of, they feed off each other sometimes. You know, Guppy will be going well, and then I'll just have to feed him the strike, and it'll be vice versa. So it's just trying to read the situation as well, and knowing the people you're coming up against. There might be some matchups early on that you can go after, and then there might be, you know, we've seen in both warm-up games there's been a little bit of swing where we probably wouldn't have thought there would be. So it's just trying to get out to those initial stages and obviously getting through those parts where the ball's swinging, and then when it isn't, that's when you can make hay.
Oh, mate, I've played against you in many leagues around the world. I've opened the bowling, you're opening the batting, and I know firsthand how devastating you can be if you get going. I just want to look back a little bit. 2015, New Zealand finished runners-up in the World Cup, home World Cup, Australia-New Zealand, great final against Australia. Six of that team is still in your squad. Martin Guptill, Ross Taylor, Kane Williamson, Tim Southee, Matt Henry and Trent Bolt. Is that still fresh in the memory of the guys, of the guys that lost in that final and how close you guys came to lifting the trophy?
I think for those boys it is, but I think it was more the way the boys played. You know, they played with a smile on their face. They enjoyed the whole occasion, being at home in front of home crowd, and just trying to put on a good show, and getting out there and just trying to play aggressive cricket, and it worked really well. So even talking to Tom Latham, I think he played 18 rounds of golf or something last World Cup, without putting too much pressure. You know, sometimes, you know, these World Cups, people are like, oh, every game's a big game. But at the end of the day, I know it is easy to say, but it is another game of cricket, but just in the World Cup format. So we've just got to take it like that. Every game is just an ordinary game. We don't have to put too much pressure on ourselves and just go out there, play the smile on our face and play our brand of cricket, because we know that if we do play our brand of cricket, we can beat anyone on our day.
Just a little look to some of the other teams. I mean, a lot's been said about Australia, England and India, of course, but you had a look at the West Indies yesterday. How powerful are they?
Yeah, I think very powerful. I think who you guys say can't really take too much from the warm-up games. With not a lot, on the outcome of the game. So sometimes guys can go and play a little bit more freer than they usually would, and have slightly longer batting lineups. And Andre Russell came in at sort of 7 or 8 last game, whereas he's probably number 6 and 6 or maybe 7. So a little bit more sort of pressure on him to come in and actually, bat through the middle stages and at the back end, instead of just coming in like he did yesterday and whack it. So, obviously they've got power all the way through their lineup, and I think Shai Hope is one of the guys to watch. Everyone's talking about Gale and Lewis and Russell and Brathwaite and those types of boys, but Shai Hope's definitely one to watch. They'll bat around him, and he played some really incredible shots yesterday, and is a man in form. He scored a lot of runs over the last sort of 12 months, so he's definitely the guy to watch, I think, in their lineup. The guys will come in and get cameos, but he's going to be the one that I think scores a lot of their runs.
Thanks, Colin, mate. That's a fantastic insight, and thanks so much for joining us. Obviously, wishing you a great start to the tournament, and let's hope to see you in the semi-finals.
Cool. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, manners. Take care, bud.
Cheers, mate. This is Love Sport. Fantastic insight from Colin Munro there for the New Zealand team. He's opening the batting, devastating batsman when he gets going, and Timewell obviously knows that very well, having played with him at Auckland and what have you. But we're going to take a little look at the game coming up. 24 hours to go. South Africa playing England. Really tough start for England.
Yeah, I like South Africa. They've got some world beaters, haven't they? I think Faf du Plessis is one of the better captains, one of the better characters in the game. I think I also saw an interview. He came out. He was like, "Look, we're not a star-studded all the way through with some of the other teams, but we're quietly confident. We've got players." Obviously, himself has been in great form with the bat. Had a brilliant tournament with Chennai Super Kings in the IPL. And you've got Quinton de Kock. He's devastating, isn't he, when he gets going at the top of the order. And then Imran Tahir is going to be a huge player with the ball. But then you look at their seam bowlers. We spoke about Del Steyn is going to be, he's definitely missing this first game. We don't know how long throughout the tournament he's going to be out. Huge goal, because he looks like he's really got a little bit of pace back. He had a really tough time with a shoulder injury for years, wasn't it? And he took a long time to get back going again. But he looked like during the IPL he had it going again. And then Rabada was outstanding during the IPO, if you saw as well. Leading wicket taker for a long time. He's going to be a huge player. If he gets going and can stay fit throughout the tournament, that's, in my opinion, that's South Africa's best way of winning this competition.
Yeah, I mean, bowling being their absolute strength. Batting, I mean, missing the likes of AB de Villiers, which for me, a World Cup isn't really the same without those sort of players. I mean, I feel like they've really missed a trick there. But in some ways, just looking at South Africa, they're sort of known as the great chokers in World Cup cricket, which is a tag they certainly don't like. They almost come under the radar. And I like Faf du Plessis. I agree with you there. I think the way that he sort of described, South Africa's chances, saying, we've always come into a World Cup, kind of been favourites. And our chats have always been, we've got to do something extra special. And I think they've then fell at the final hurdle. And he said, that's where we went wrong. We didn't have to do anything special. We just needed to keep doing what we're doing. And I think they've certainly got their feet on the ground. They're certainly coming in under the radar, which I think is a good thing for South African cricket. I'm just not sure they have the firepower to go all the way.
Yeah, you look through their lineup. You've got, the middle order, Hashim Amla, JP Duminy, whilst they're two class players and have been for a long time. Are they the type of players that are going to really take you down? They're the type of players you bat around. Like Colin Munro said with Shai Hope with the West Indies, they're the type of players you bat around. And then, we've seen the way we've seen England bat the last, 2-3 years is you're going to need some runs if you're going to win this competition. You're going to need to be scoring consistently over 300. If you're getting in and around 280, 300, you're not winning. So Hashim Amla, JP Duminy, great players. That means Quinton de Kock's going to have a big role. David Miller, look at that lineup there. traditionally, we've seen him play some huge innings in T20s. Consistency, they're a bit few and far between. So I think for me, if you look up and down their lineup, I think a lot of things have got to go perfectly right for South Africa to go a long way.
Yeah, Feff Lukwayo, I mean, he's coming in almost at number seven, so they're a little bit light down there, aren't they? Especially their tail. And I think if you look at, compare that to England's tail, I mean, we back down to number 11, don't we?
Yeah, and yeah, as you say, Feff Lukwayo and Chris Morris has come back into the squad. At one time, he was one of the best all-rounders in the game, but seems to have lost a bit of consistency there as well. So they've got a lot of players, it seems, that if this squad was in the tournament 2-3 years ago, you'd probably fancy them a bit stronger than what it is now. But as you say, we're going to talk about all throughout the World Cup, it can be such a lottery sometimes. All it takes is two or three of your guys on any given day to have a real day out and you can win a game. So I'm really excited for the World Cup. I think it's going to be great. But I think this is a nice start for England, going back to kind of England's perspective on it. I think this will be a challenging start to the tournament, but not the biggest challenge that they're going to face throughout this group stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think, you know, we just compare it with New Zealand's start. I mean, obviously they've got a lighter start. I almost think it's a good thing that South Africa are playing against England, or England are playing against South Africa, because they've been ready for a while now, you know, and you can almost get a little bit, you know, the World Cup's been building up, and, you know, I mean, is that quite a hard thing to sort of get your head around as a player?
Yeah, I'm sure, and without knowing this, I'm sure England would have rather not have played these two warm-up games against Australia and Afghanistan. They just played a five-match series at home against Pakistan, which was a really good test, a really good performance. Guys got a lot of, you know, overs under their belt, aside from Liam Dawson and James Vince didn't play too much. So aside from that, I'm sure England would rather have not played those games. You saw in the two warm-up games, the bowlers didn't bowl their full allocations. They, you know, especially the game against Afghanistan, I'm sure if England would have brought their seamers on quicker, they'd have finished the game off, but they just bowled the spin in the hope that the spinners would get them out, because they want to keep their bowlers fresh. They want to hold the bowlers back because they're ready. They're all good to go. They've logged all the overs during the ODI series against Pakistan. And yeah, those warm-up games, they played them because they have to. They're obligated. So England, I'm sure England will be ready to go.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is sort of the sort of element of surprise. You know, through the ages, you know, you play in a World Cup or you get selected to play for your country and you go up against India or Pakistan, and a lot of these players were sort of fresh and new. You know, you would face someone for the first time. Nowadays, as you know, you've played around the world, you know, you almost know the opposition teammates better than your own. And, you know, that sort of element surprise isn't there anymore. But, I mean, are there some players that still could catch the England batsmen out?
Yeah, you're definitely right. The way with the T20 franchise circuit as it is now, you know, it's my job now, it's what I do. So you can literally be playing with a player 1 month and then against them the next month and then back with them again the month after. That's how it works. Colin Munro, I've played with and against many times over the last 12 months. So it is a funny kind of experience where you'll be in the nets. You and I could be in the same franchise side, I'll be bowling at you in the nets, and then, you know, 3 weeks later, we could be on complete opposite sides, and you will obviously have, in the nets, have seen me bowl, and, you know, you're then going to feed that back. So one way or another, word gets around in these leagues, and a lot of more and more of these English players are now allowed to play in a few more leagues, seeing more English guys going to the IPL, guys coming for little stints in the T10 league or the Big Bash or whatever, Joe Root, Joss Butler playing in the Big Bash this year. So a little bit that surprise factor has gone. I noticed Afghanistan didn't play Mujeeb, their mystery spinner.
Interesting.
I know he has played in the IPL and he played domestic cricket for Hampshire here last year, so he's not unknown, but I noticed they pulled him out. I don't know, that might have just been him being resting, or that might have been, okay, yeah, we don't want to show all our tricks too early. So there's definitely still going to be a little bit of that. You don't want to show your opposition what you've got before the tournament's even started.
But I mean, talk about Afghanistan, Rashid Khan. I mean, he's a great, fantastic cricketer, obviously IPL, etc. I mean, how good is he?
He's excellent, yeah. As I said, luckily we had him for Sussex last year. We've got him back again this year, which is brilliant. It was literally the case of it'd be myself and Jofra would open the bowling, and if we didn't get a wicket, or somebody else had, you know, somebody's got off to a good start, we'd bring Rash on, then Rash would get him out. So maybe we should just open the bowling with Rash next year. I remember we had a game against Middlesex, I think Paul Sterling was just whacking us everywhere, and then bring on Rash gets him out, like, pretty much first ball, and then it's kind of, okay, we've just wasted our time then. He's world class, is Rashid Khan. It's the pace that he bowls fast at the stumps and just turns it enough either way, and guys just can't seem to pick him. And it's not like, say, Adil Rashid's the type of bowler who tosses it up, gets it above the eye line, and will probably get hit for more sixes, but will also take wickets. Rashid Khan just doesn't get hit for runs nowadays. It's just guys are just happy just to sit back and just knock him for singles, because they don't don't want to get out to him because you try and attack him, more often than not, you get out.
Well, listen, I'd love to get more thoughts on some of the dark horses, you know, some of the players that are really going to take this World Cup by storm. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup show on Love Sports, and I want to get more thoughts from Tamil, so don't go anywhere.
Love Sports.
Well, then we're just talking about some of the dark horses, you know, talking about Rashid Khan, who played with Tamil down at Sussex. Any other players that come to mind? I mean, we've touched on the youth and the pace of Rabada. You know, being a bowler yourself, you know, who's really going to take this World Cup by storm?
Yeah, I don't think you can call Rabada a dark horse anymore. He's the leader of the South African attack now. He bowls, you know, upwards of 90 miles an hour, gets searing Yorkers in. So everyone knows about him. I think, look at the, you got the, in the competition, everyone's kind of tipping England, India, Australia, aren't they? They're kind of your top three, and then there seems to be a little bit more of a fight for that last four. Obviously, you know, an upset could happen. Kind of hope it does happen, just to make the tournament just as interesting. But yeah, and that kind of next tier, you've obviously got New Zealand, West Indies, South Africa. Pakistan didn't give a great account of themselves in the ODI series here. They shuffled the pack a bit more, brought in Wahab Riaz for some extra pace in their bowling attack. I've played a lot in Pakistan and in the PSL, so I know a lot of their guys, and they're really talented. I think a lot of people would have written them off after the way they performed in the ODI series. But they actually batted pretty well, didn't they? They scored 300 consistently, and England obviously were just so strong and went back at them.
But I think that's kind of... Greg Chappell was talking in an article about he thinks the best bowling attack will win this World Cup. And I sort of thought about that, and in some ways I agree, but I think sometimes the batting's so strong, it's almost if you get 380, we'll get more. And that's been England's approach. And, you know, I'm just, you know, it's probably a two-tiered question, really. On one hand, I'm a bit worried that sort of approach from England, you know, can go wrong at some point. You know, when you're not having a good day, it can go wrong. And I think from the other point of view, do you think there's some relevance to that? Do you think that some of the bowling attacks, the strongest bowling attacks, will really do well this year?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, I'm a fast bowler, so I'm always gonna back up the bowlers. And 50-over cricket internationally is a tough environment now for a fast bowler. So you need a good squad of bowlers. If you're a squad, if you're an 11, sorry, that comes into a game with five bowlers, it's going to be difficult.
Someone's going to go the distance.
Exactly. You need a good sixth bowler. That's where England, with Ben Stokes, is your sixth bowler. That's gold dust. And also you appreciate that not every team will have a world-class all-rounder. So those are the teams that you look at. If someone's got a genuine all-rounder, you look at India, you've got Hardik Pandya. Australia have got, well, they've got plenty of guys that both bat and bowl. So it's going to be challenging, but you need guys that can take wickets. You look at Pakistan against England, they barely took a wicket in the power play throughout the
and that's
whole
kind
series.
Of allegedly been the you know, they've done well in World Cups, haven't they?
Yeah,
but it's normally down to their bowling. They've had sort of death bowlers who bowl, and I thought that was quite poor from them, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. They struggled at the end. That's why I think they brought in Wahab Riaz. Mohammad Amir is going to be in. They needed that extra pace and just for something to happen. You look at England have got opportunities to take wickets. Jofra Archer's already proved he's a wicket taker. We've spoken plenty about Adil Rashid. Moeen Ali's a little bit more of the holding role as a spinner. I think the team, if the team's bowling attack can step up, you look at New Zealand actually. Trent Bolt in English conditions is, you know, probably one of the better bowlers in the world. He took 4 for 50, I think, yesterday against the West Indies. He got a few wickets against India as well. So he comes in good form because he bowls big in swinging to the right hander as left arm over. So that's, if you can take wickets in the power play and get teams behind the eight ball, we're always coming back to England because they're the benchmark, I guess. But we see the starts that Jason Roy and Johnny Bairstow give England. That then catapults them through the rest of the innings. So, but if you can get a team three down in the power play, it changes the way you have to play in the next 10, 15 overs. England are often 0 or 1 down coming out of the power play, and then they just say, okay, we're getting 350 here. But if you've got some good opening bowlers that can take wickets, that's going to set you up really well for the World Cup. Well,
there's been plenty of talk about aggression, fast bowling. And with a bit of aggression and fast bowling comes a bit of chat times. And I know that sledging's been on the tip of people's tongues for some time. You know, I suppose the game against Australia and what they're going to receive from the crowd, you know, particularly the likes of David Warner. I mean, is that part of your game? Do you sort of feel that it's overgoverned these days?
Personally, I'm not a huge sledger. I'm more of a... I might give a silent stare or something like that.
I think bowling at 95 mile an hour is enough of...
Yeah, I'm not the most vocal of guys, and... I think, especially when you look at Steve Smith and David Warner, who are obviously going to get a tremendous amount of attention, to put it lightly, from the crowd. I don't think the players are actually going to be that bothered by it. It's more going to be from the crowd. And I think it was a bit disappointing when they were getting booed. Like, Steve Smith scored 100 and he got booed by the crowd. And I think it's like, okay, come
get
on.
Over
like,
it.
Yeah,
it's move
it's,
on.
It's been and gone now. Yeah. Obviously, it's Australian and it's England, and I'm sure this is going to continue all the way through the Ashes afterwards as well. But I think if someone scores 100, it doesn't look great upon you if you're then booing him.
Of course.
They've served their bans, they've done their, it's been and gone, hasn't it? It's not like they did anything, you know, they didn't hurt anybody. They haven't, you know, they're not committed a crime.
No.
They cheated on the game of cricket. So sure. I don't think it'll be an issue on the field. I'm sure you'll see some instances where bowlers will get fired up. Rabada's a fiery fella. He doesn't mind. He doesn't mind saying a word or two. He's got a few cards on his
points on his driving license.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't mind a little bit of chat. But I think it's good. It's a good spectacle to watch, isn't it? If you can see a fast bowler and a batsman in a real good battle, it makes it more interesting to watch, doesn't it? And that's what cricket's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose the issue of sledging has been governed a lot now. And I mean, Dave Richardson's been talking in the ICC of clamping down hard on this tournament. And, you know, I just from a personal point of view, I mean, we want to see characters in the game. I think, you know, that's what kids are going to watch. You know, it's so important for the game of cricket, or say game of cricket, English cricket, really, that this World Cup really builds steam. You know, we saw what 2005 Ashes did, you know, and how it sort of gathered momentum. And I just hope the same can be done for this World Cup, you know, in terms of really young players sort of attaching themselves to the heroes and for really getting some momentum. So I hope in many ways that they don't sort of over-govern the game. I hope they allow the players to have a bit of niggle, a bit of this and that. I mean, you see a lot of umpires now coming straight in as soon as a batsman has a word and what have you. And you sort of think, just let it go a little bit. You know, it's nice to have to see that. You know, the Ben Stokes fire and a bit of chat and here and there. So I'm sure we'll get that. But I suppose we've got Guy Watts, who's going to come and join us. Guy, very good to have you on the show, mate. And thanks for joining us today. He's just, I think he's putting his coffee down or something like that, you know, trying to get his notes together. Guy, talk us through some of your thoughts leading up to tomorrow's game.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, well, really excited. Can't wait. And I wish I was going to be there, to be honest, but hopefully I'm going to be here with you, Nick, which is probably the next best place to be. If I can't be there in person, then I'll be here with you. There's also a small matter of an opening ceremony going on this afternoon, and we're more used to these with the Olympics and stuff, and I think the last time that we had a World Cup here 20 years ago, not that I remember it, but there was a pretty rubbish fireworks display up at Lords. I think Tony Blair gave a speech where you couldn't actually hear him because his mic wasn't working, and they've decided to take a slightly different approach this time. They're actually having the opening ceremony today. It's going to be on the Mall, and it's going to be attended by about 4,000 people. I'm not quite sure personally why you'd have wanted to go to this. I don't know if people thought there was going to be some cricket on or what, but it's going to be hosted by Andrew Flintoff and Paddy McGuinness. Don't they do Top Gear these days, though? I mean, I don't know. The career of Andrew Flintoff after he stopped playing cricket has been a little bit crazy, hasn't it? But yeah, it's an hour-long party. Starts at 3:30, 4,000 people there. Also going to be represented by Kevin Peterson and Chris Hughes, who you may not know if you're a cricket fan because he was on Love Island. And that is basically his claim to fame. He's done a lot of horse racing coverage on TV. I'm not quite sure. Has anyone ever heard of Chris Hughes being a big cricket fan? Is there a link there, or is he just literally available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, and opening ceremonies?
I'll pass that on to Tom.
Yeah, I've watched Love Island now and again with the missus, and he's a huge cricket fan. He's always he's always at stuff with Stuart Broad and Johnny Bairstow, and he loves the cricket. He's always, I think he played in the, there's a BBC game.
Was that the tail enders one?
Yeah. He played in that. He's always putting on social media at the cricket, so he obviously loves it. And he's now using his fame, should we call it, from Love Island to live out his dream of being a cricketer.
Time on Love Island, can you?
I'm not sure my missus will be doing for us.
Careful, Nick. But, you know, no, I think I could, to be honest. It'll be an interesting one, that's for sure. The Kevin Peterson one's quite interesting. Of all the England players to choose from the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, obviously one of our very best, he was someone I absolutely loved watching. I saw he did a couple of tweets yesterday or the day before talking about, you know, where his allegiances were going to lie, and I thought it was quite interesting that he openly acknowledged that. I mean, it was good, well, from my point of view, that he came out saying, I am going to support England, because obviously having played over 100 times in a lot of formats for England, you would have expected that. But he obviously was getting a lot of questions saying, who are you going to be supporting? And I guess that's something you can relate to a little bit, Nick, having grown up in South Africa. You must be able to relate a little bit to some of the stick that KP took, at least during his time playing for England.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was a big fan of KP. Playing with him, I mean, has there been a bigger legend as a batsman in English cricket for some time who's really changed the face of English cricket? That 2005 Ashes we spoke about, and actually playing with him, I enjoyed it. His professionalism, I mean, as a young guy coming into the team to start with, you know, watching him train, watching him practice, the way he went about things. And look, he is someone who says it as is. I think, you know, that comes with the good and bad. And, you know, I think he was honest. You know, he was honest about saying that, look, he is from South Africa. He grew up there. He has a connection with it. There's an emotional connection. But he owes England a huge amount in terms of the opportunity that he got to play on that world stage and build the career that he has. I still think that he does have a huge amount to offer. And I think when you see him and talk about the game and talk about one day cricket, T20 cricket, I know he's a huge advocate to get English players over to the IPL and get them playing and experience these world tournaments. So for me, I think England should really look at some of the things he does say. But yeah, it was a bit contentious, but I think he was honest, you know, and I think that's what you get with him.
But he did really pave the way for people like you, Tamal, and obviously all the others who have gone on to play IPL and the franchise cricket, because ironically, one of the big things that triggered in some ways the falling out that KP had with England was him wanting to play more IPL and they were basically saying no. Then Andrew Strauss comes in 2015 and one of the first things he does is say, we need more players in the IPL. And Peterson must have been going, yes, this is what I've been saying for years and years. And like you would say, I imagine that one of the biggest like beneficial things for your game has been playing, whether it's IPL, Big Bash or any of the other leagues around the world, getting to play with, whether it's Virat Kohli or David Warner, whoever it might be, it's massively beneficial for anyone's game, surely, to play in those leagues.
Oh, hugely, yeah. You can only learn so much watching on TV or playing county cricket or whatever, not obviously putting a slant on county cricket, but these things are huge. The IPL's huge. Kevin Peterson obviously was one of the first Englishmen to really experience it fully. As you say, he was very vocal that he wasn't always able to play the whole tournament or other guys weren't able to go at all. So one thing you definitely get with Kevin Peterson is honesty, and it's brutal. He doesn't care, you know, about ruffling feathers and things. I've played with and against KP in different leagues. And yeah,
he dish out a bit of sledging, does he?
No, not really. No. But it's just more, if he's got an opinion, he's got something to say, he's going to say it, whether you like it or not. And I think I found it, he's the type of person that reacts well to you giving it back to him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's the type of person, if he feels that he can walk all over you a little bit, he probably will. And so I felt lucky. I'm quite a, you know, I'm not a shy guy. If I tell him to, you know, do one, I'll tell him to do one. And, you know, but I actually think he's the type of player that respects that and thrives off it, a bit more interaction. And he likes those type of characters. But as Compo said, he's been a great advocate. I think there's a documentary coming out this summer.
Yeah, that looks so good.
About KP. And you see, obviously, both sides of the coin, good and the bad, but he's given so much to English cricket and done so well over the last however many years.
Fascinating. Always enjoyed KP. He's always got something to say.
This is Love Sport.
We've spoken a little bit about the South African team and some of the players and, you know, of course, your partnership or your relationship with Jofra Archer. I mean, you know, how important is pace going to be in this World Cup?
Yeah, it's going to be huge. We've spoken about not just pace, but taking wickets. Obviously, pace, obviously, is associated with that, as is, you know, mystery spin, leg spin. So taking wickets is going to be key. You know, we've spoken about how slanted one day cricket is now towards batsmen, and so you've got to negate that. You've got to find ways. That's why England have got Jofra in, because he's proven not only is he a fast bowler, he's a fast bowler that takes wickets. You know, you can bowl fast and not be overly effective, as you know. You know, there'll be some bowlers that can bowl fast, but they, you know,
the faster they bowl, the further they go.
Exactly.
Almost. Yeah. So. And the only thing I was going to say just quickly is from Mark Wood's perspective, I mean, you know, the difference between sort of 87, 88 and 93 is, I mean, people don't realise. They almost 100%. Say to me, what is the difference, Nick? What, you know, is there a difference between that? And I mean, you could probably explain, I mean, from a batsman's perspective, that 5 mile an hour is a big difference. And I just hope that, you know, fully fit and firing Mark Wood, you know, obviously Jofra's and, you know, a fine physical specimen, but, you know, if they're really firing, it makes a big difference. But if Mark's not quite there, you know, with his skiddy pace, it does worry me that he might be somebody that on a good wicket could go the distance.
Yeah, and everybody can go the distance, as we all know. Unfortunately, the best bowlers in the world will have bad days or come up against a batsman having a better day. But you're right, that 5-6 mile an hour, it literally might not sound that much, but there are so many bowlers that can bowl 85 miles an hour at their top end that aren't very many bowlers that can bowl 90 plus mile an hour. And as you say, it sounds pretty trivial, 5-6 miles an hour, but it does make a huge difference. It's more of a difference than between an 80 and an 85 mile an hour bowler. But guys aren't worried about 85 mile an hour bowlers anymore. So yeah, Jof's got a big role to play in the World Cup. I'm sure they'll manage him through it. They'll speak to him. He's had a long... I think people... This might sound strange because it's only T20 tournaments, but he's been playing non-stop cricket since pretty much November. He played the T10 tournament, which is very, the workloads aren't there at all. But then he went straight to the Big Bash, played the whole Big Bash, 15 games, I think it was, with all the domestic flights in Australia, which adds up. He came home for a week or so, flew straight to the IPL again, played, I think, 10 games in the IPL. Again, all the domestic flights, came straight home, straight into the England-Ireland game, straight into the Pakistan series. And I thought they were really good at giving him some rest there. So it's something you've got to keep an eye on, because it adds up. It builds up over the course of a year. I know people think, oh, T20, it's a, you know, it's a laugh and a giggle and it's a jolly, but it actually takes a little bit more out of you as it is. So it's important to keep your bowlers fresh. And as you say, if Joff and Mark Wood can both be consistently in and around and over 90 mile an hour, it definitely, if nothing else, will be fun to watch.
Yeah, of course it will. He's of course dominated a lot of the discussion. But we've got a good mate of mine, former England batsman Rob Key, who had to say a little bit about him earlier.
You go over to the IPL, you go over to the Big Bash, even worse in Australia, where they don't rate any English cricketer at the start, and prove to them that you're a very, very good bowler, a class act. I think he's got the world at his feet, Archer.
Got the world at his feet, and I'd have to agree with that. I think we both agree with that. And I suppose, you know, there has been an eye on cricket after the World Cup. You know, it's a huge summer. I mean, the Ashes is just a small tournament afterwards, which is I think it's going to be a fascinating. And, you know, I think someone like Jofra, I mean, he's got to have a shout at that, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he'll be in. Personally, if he stays fit throughout this World Cup and doesn't pick up an injury, I've seen what he can do with the Red Ball in Championship cricket with Sussex, as of many batsmen in the County Championship. Unfortunately, I saw an Instagram or a tweet that the county champion, the Twitter account put out of all Jofra's wickets, all his bowls, and there's so many, and the stumps are just going everywhere. He bowls big hooping in swingers with the Red Duke ball. You won't see it as much with the White Kookaburra. It doesn't swing as much. With the White Kookaburra, he'll be more seaming it and nipping it off the seam, but with the red Duke, he swings it at good pace as well. Everything into your body.
Horrible.
You know, you just want to get
short
off,
leg, yeah, leg get gully.
Off, exactly. He's relentlessly coming at you all day. So I think, personally, if I had to make a shout, he'd be in the Ashes squad. Not great news for Sussex and my boys. We might not see too much of Joff now for the rest of the summer, but, you know, I can't see a situation where if he's fit, he's not donning the whites later on this year.
Well, I think we're getting to the point now, and it is a bit contentious, as good as Broad and Anderson have been, but there might be a sort of possibility where one of them might miss out.
Potentially, I think England, you know, home conditions, you can't look further than Jimmy Anderson. He's still the man, isn't he? He's still a superstar. Stuart Broad as well shows no sign of kind of slowing up at home. It'd be a bit more interesting come the winters and now whether they start to kind of have a home bowling attack and an away bowling attack.
Yeah.
I think that'll be interesting
to
see how it goes when you get on the flatter pitches again in Australia, you know, South Africa.
We just lacked a little bit of pace,
exactly,
haven't we?
So you bring Joff in, you saw they start to flirt around with, you had Ollie Stone called up to the tours this winter. He got an injury, but he's almost back. So they were definitely keen to find someone with extra pace. Mark Wood's obviously been in and out the side, but we saw how effective he was in the West Indies. That spell in St. Lucia when he bowled rapid at the West Indies was awesome to see. So England, again, your only hope with Wood is he can sustain it for a period of time. So that's where, you know, Joff comes in. And he, in four-day cricket, he does go up and down the gears a bit more. He won't come in and bowl upwards of 90 mile an hour all day. He'll manage his way around it. He'll flirt around kind of, you know, mid-80s, and then he'll crank it up, especially, unfortunately, when a few tail-enders comes in and he sniffs a chance.
A few wickets.
Sniffs a chance to get off the park as well. Joff, you know, you might see a few extra mile an hour. But, yeah, I'll be very surprised if he's not in the England team for a long time.
I tell you what, that is exciting for England. I mean, just watching him bowl, the ease in which he does it. I mean, you know, look, Tom, well, you must be bored stiff about talking about your mate, and I suppose it's going to continue throughout the World Cup if he keeps being the X-factor that we think and what we've watched so far. And I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, because I got put on the spot yesterday. Semi-finalists, give me your predictions.
All right, so you got your big three: England, Australia, India. I can't look too far past that, and as I said, that fourth slot is open. I think for me it comes down to the West Indies and New Zealand. I think I do fancy New Zealand, because I like their bowling attack and I like their top four batters. See, West Indies came up yesterday. I think the West Indies could be a team that could score 400 this tournament, and they could get bowled out for 110, 120. I think they're going to be very hit and miss. I think, as Munna said on interview earlier, Shai Hope's really, really good player. So I like him. And he comes into this tournament, he scored, I think, 500 or 600 this calendar year,
yeah,
like, alone. He's
fantastic.
He's coming
player
in really, and he, as you say, under the radar. He's not Chris Gayle, he's not Andre Russell, and he's just chipping away and scoring a lot of runs. So, but they're bowling the West Indies. I'm not too sure about it. They've got no spinner, really. at all, and in terms of a wicket-taking spinner and the pace. So if I had to go for my fourth team, book me in, New Zealand.
Brilliant. And look, I mean, you've obviously bowled and played against some great players. Look, I've left it to the end. It's not often you go into a show and not talk about India, because, of course, they've got some unbelievable players. You've played in the IPL. You've played under, you know, the best player in the world at the moment, Virat Kohli. He is the Indian captain. You know, what was that like? I really want to find out more.
Yeah, Virat's cool. I enjoyed him. It was quite funny, actually. So in the January before the IPL, I went to India. We played a three-match T20 series against India. I was opening the bowling. Virat Kohli was opening the batting. And it was my first overseas tour for England. And I thought, you know, I'd done really well in some T20 leagues. But at that point, that was the highest kind of level of cricket that I'd played at easily. And it was a good barometer for me just to see where I'm at. You know, I've got the new ball here. Virat Kohli's at the other end. It's, you know,
it's
huge crowds out in India. Like, so it was a nice, you know, this is okay, we're going to see what we're about. And I didn't get him out, but I did all right. And one thing I noticed about Kohli is, God, he's intense out on the field. I remember I bowled one ball at him and he didn't time it as well as what he wanted to time. He got a single and he, you know, just jogged down to the other end to where I was, and he was shouting at himself, swearing at himself. I think purely just because he didn't middle the ball or time it. He wasn't even playing an attacking shot. I think he was maybe running it to third man or whatever, but he didn't execute it the way he wanted to, and he was spitting feathers. And then, but then off the field, he's cool. I rocked up for the IPL a few months later, and he was great. He was just one of the guys. It's you know, you're hanging around, you're playing table tennis in the, you know, in the team room and all that, but then as soon as you get on the field, yeah, he crosses that line and he goes nuts.
Same as in the field. I mean, in terms of captaining you and what have you. How was
Again, it's a really strange dynamic in India, because a young Indian bowler would react completely different to his captaincy as I did. So I remember we were playing at Eden Gardens. Chris Wokes was batting, actually, and I bowled a pretty average ball. I had all the men up on the offside, apart from third man, and Wokesy hit me through cover for four. Virat comes straight to me, I want deep cover. And I said, no, I bowled a bad ball, I'm okay, thank you. And he said, okay, cool, and he left it. But I think you watch the IPL, if you're an Indian bowler, you don't
get that.
That conversation doesn't even happen. Do you know what I mean?
It's, deep extra goes out.
Covers just before the bowler's even looked. Covers already out, and so it's an interesting dynamic. And because these guys, Virat Kohli, MS Dhoni, Rohit Sharma, they're so enamored in India, you can't. These guys wouldn't even dare tell them no. So it was a good dynamic. He came and had a conversation with me and respected me enough when I said no, I'm okay, thank you. But then, yeah, as I say, the other side of the coin with the young Indian bowlers. That doesn't happen. It just goes like that. But I enjoyed Virat. It was a good experience. I learned a lot off him. But yeah, that intensity on the field. Like, we played the last game of the whole IPL. We finished bottom. We were bad. And I wasn't playing. I was doing 12th man. He was at deep mid wicket on the boundary in front of us. And he took a catch and just celebrated like he just won the World Cup. Like, the huge shout, the huge roar. And I was a bit like, oh, this is the last game. We're going home after this. Like, we're done. And he's still pumped up. So it's great to see.
Oh, brilliant. So, I mean, look, I mean, the India, pretty much a shoo-in for the semi-finals?
I think so. You've got Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, then you've got Jasprit Bumrah with the ball. He's one of the best in the world as well.
Tamil, I've got to say, it's been an awesome time with you, mate. Really great insight. And look, I think we're all really excited for the World Cup now. This has been Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup show. I'll be back tomorrow at 10 as England's World Cup campaign finally gets underway for the real against South Africa at the Oval. We'll bring you news of the toss, team news and updates through the first half hour of play. So do make sure that you join us then. For now, goodbye.